Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
We're faced with probably the greatest threat to the homeland from terrorist attack, and our primary means of defending against that is FISA. And to take that tool away, I think, is going to result in successful terrorist attack and a loss of life.
I think for William Barr, there also should be a conversation of how it's been abused and how FISA, the surveillance that has taken place from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act against American citizens without proper oversight, by lying to be able to get warrants. Should we not note the failures here? Section 702, they pushed for a measure, they pushed for a vote, but 19 Republicans joined the Democrats and the rule fell. We were talking about reform to FISA. Tony Katz today. Great to be with you. Find everything I do at TonyKatz.com. I hope you'll join me over there and be a part of what's happening. Mike Johnson has taken another hit on this. He's trying to get some things done, and he cannot get the Republican caucus, if you will, together on this. This is a procedural thing. But Republicans who are playing a bit of hardline, they're like, nope, we're not going to have this happen. Now, when it comes to FISA, when it comes to this surveillance of American citizens, I am less inclined to worry about the hard line, meaning I'm okay with it. You tell me that without FISA, we're going to have terrorist attacks and people are going to be killed. I will tell you that the abuse of the system by the institutions has not been properly addressed. And without it, what do you get? You get this, a total lack of trust. So it doesn't matter if the former Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, says that this is going to result in successful terrorist attacks and loss of life. You have an institution that has abused the system and abused the FISA court. It's not a court you'll ever be in front of. It's a special court. Hey, look, we've got this proof of something going on. Well, okay, we'll take your word for it. That's basically how you get the warrants, how you get things done. And when a foreign national is speaking to an American citizen, you're supposed to redact the American citizen. Doesn't mean the citizen has done anything wrong. The citizen has Fourth Amendment rights. The foreign national, zero constitutional rights. Let's say this again. The foreign national has no constitutional rights whatsoever. And the system was abused. The system was abused repeatedly. Why shouldn't we notice this? Why can't people say we can't have the same old, same old? How in the world can we say a warrant is a problem? The protection of the American citizen must come first. And I can, without, I think, hesitation, engage the idea that if you're telling me that in order to protect the American citizen, we can't protect the American citizen's rights, of what value is the protection? Of what value is the protection of you, me, and we if our rights are not protected at the same time? We're protected to be abused by our own government? Nah. But if you want to talk about people being abused, this hearing going on right now with Catherine Herridge, let me say for the record, I believe that I have had Catherine Herridge on the show once. Once, years ago. And she's fantastic. And when she left Fox and went over to CBS, I said it at the time, what an absolute massive, massive loss for ABC, for Fox, and what an incredible pickup. Incredible pickup for CBS. Just huge. Just huge. Well, at CBS, they don't play nice. And Catherine Herridge, who was laid off stunningly, CBS kept her equipment. They kept her materials, which means they kept her sources. They kept her sources. And she is in front of this House Judiciary panel on the press, and her commentary is outrageously important.
When I was laid off in February, an incident reinforced in my mind the importance of protecting confidential sources. CBS News locked me out of the building and seized hundreds of pages of my reporting files, including confidential source information. Multiple sources said they were concerned that by working with me to expose government corruption and misconduct, they would be identified and exposed. I pushed back, and with the public support of my union, SAG-AFTRA, the records were returned. CBS's News' decision to seize my reporting records crossed a red line that I believe should never be crossed again by any media organization in the future.
She's right. And the conversation she's having is outrageously important. And it's important on both sides of the aisle.
Good morning, Chairman Jordan, Ranking Member Nadler, Chairman Roy, and Ranking Member Scanlon, and members of the subcommittee. I'm here today with a deep sense of gratitude and humility. I appreciate the subcommittee taking the time to focus again on the importance of protecting reporter sources and the vital safeguards provided by the Press Act. As you know, in February, I was held in contempt of court for refusing to disclose my confidential sources on a national security story. I think my current situation can help put the importance of the Press Act into context. One of our children recently asked me if I would go to jail, if we would lose our house, and if we would lose our family savings to protect my reporting sources. I wanted to answer that in this United States, where we say we value democracy and the role of a vibrant and free press, that it was impossible, but I could not offer that assurance. The Bipartisan Press Act, which came out of this House committee, would put an end to the sort of legal jeopardy that I have experienced firsthand in the federal courts.
It seems just outlandish, outrageous, nutty, that we would even think that extra protections were necessary based on how we view a free press as necessary. But there are many who don't view a free press as necessary. We talk about in Canada how they really do want to license journalists. We've heard people play around with that in the United States, laugh those people right out of the room. But it doesn't mean that they don't take their dangerous ideas and come back again and again and again and again and again. One of the people on this panel testifying is Cheryl Atkinson, who had her own issues with CBS, including the taking of her laptop back then.
Ms. Atkinson, what's your experience?
Well, I think it's interesting to hear people say, and I agree with this, that the government should not be intervening in news coverage. But in my experience at CBS, that happens every day. Members of committees, heads of committees, members of Congress, and the White House call the Bureau in Washington, D.C., contacts that they have, editors and managers up in New York to try to shape our coverage.
Well, that I don't find particularly objectionable as long as there is no force or threat of force behind that. Do you find that to be the case?
Or, I don't know what was said. I just know they called. There's no physical force threatened, but there certainly is a great deal of pressure, you know, weighing on the networks in terms of their coverage.
Well, what about government acts directly? Have you encountered such intimidation yourself directly from the government, or is that all kind of channeled through your employers?
Well, I felt a great deal of pressure channeled through my employers. You know, I was told that certain stories weren't going to air because we were getting phone calls. And even though there was nothing wrong with the stories, let's just let it rest for a day. Let's pick it up another time. They're really mad this time. And there was no objection over the content of the story or the facts. It was they just, as I was told, they just didn't like it, or it was a story that they felt was unfavorable at times.
Well, I mean, if they were offering additional facts that might have been ignored, if they were offering different opinions, that's freedom of speech. But if behind those suggestions was the threat of force, that's a completely different matter. Do you agree?
I would like to inform Representative McClintock that, my God, you're trying too hard. The force is the force. The government saying, hey, I don't know if you should say that, is the force. It is the threat. Let me go back to something he said here. Let me see if I can find this really quick. Hold on.
For a day.
Directly from the government, or exactly?
He doesn't find these things objectionable, right? He doesn't think that there's a problem. Let me see if I can put this in a way that makes sense here.
Ms. Atkinson, what's your experience?
Well, I think it's...
I went too far back.
Encountered such intimidation. What about government acts directly? Have you encountered such intimidation yourself directly from the government, or is that all kind of channeled through your employers?
Well, I felt a great deal of pressure channeled through my employers. You know, I was told that certain stories weren't...
Ms. Atkinson...
You see what I'm talking about? If the pressure is put through the employer, does it matter that the pressure was put to you? Government getting involved in what a news organization does is the problem. But what really isn't getting discussed is the amount of news organizations that welcomed the pressure because they wanted to work with the government to shape the stories. Which, when government works with big business, that is actually the dictionary definition of what? Fascism. This is important stuff, and I wanted to make sure I shared it. What these news organizations are doing at the highest levels, how little they actually care about news, and how little they care about the people who are reporting on the news, who are putting, who are really aggressively trying to get things done, trying to really do reporting, and they're being told by their newsroom, no. I don't think we should be telling that story. We should tell this story. I'm Walter Duranty. Like, that is our issue. Clearly our issue. I will have a full update on this tomorrow. Keep it here. This is Tony Katz today. This commentary from the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., former advisor to Donald Trump, John Bolton. You've seen John Bolton, the mustache, the walrus thing. Tony Katz today. And CNN is doing an interview with him. Well, of course CNN is, because he says he doesn't like Trump, and so therefore you get interviews on CNN. Don't ask me. I think the issue was look at what's being said by the RNC under Laura Trump, and she's doing fundraising saying the 2020 election was stolen. Isn't this terrible? Oh, can we? What do you want from me? Please don't make me like focus on that. But CNN does not get to act like somehow it's an arbiter of morality when this is what you put on your airwaves.
And focus on the 2020 election that's obviously obsessing Trump because he can't admit that he lost, will cost Republicans at the ballot. I think people want to move on from 2020, even most Republicans, although they don't seem to realize it. So this concentration on what happened in the past, I think will work to Biden's advantage, and he's unpopular enough. He desperately needs it.
And you've said you're going to write someone in November.
That's what I did in 2020, and I'll do it again this November.
Who did you write in 2020? You've never revealed that before.
Well, I might as well say it now. I voted for Dick Cheney.
What does one do with that? I wrote in Dick Cheney? That is something. What would make you think that he is the president for the time? Well, he ain't afraid to shoot somebody in the face. Honestly, that's a reason to vote for somebody. And I listen now, like this is what cable news has to do to fill its time. Dear Lord, isn't there something out there, I don't know, that maybe Joe Biden said we should be talking about?
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century. 21st century.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why we don't talk about Joe Biden, because he thinks he's in the 20th century.
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century. 21st century.
Go on, Democrats. Tell me why he's a better choice. Go on. How many gaffes can you people put up? That's right. Gaffes. Joe Biden has a lot of gaffes.
Name me one.
Oh, well, sure, Mr. President. I'm happy to.
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century, 21st century.
He doesn't know what century he's in. He talks to dead people. He doesn't know how to get off a stage. Now I want you to tell me why you think Joe Biden's going to be on the ticket. Come the convention in August, which has, as we've discussed, this has really become a thing. He might not make it on the ballot in Ohio, although I assume they will change the rules there to get him on the ballot. Alabama is now having this issue. Now in Alabama, it matters less because that's not a state that based just on the, registrations that Biden's going to win. He's just not going to do that. He's not going to magically pull out Alabama. But Ohio's a real fight. And because the convention is in August, well, the requirements for being on the ballot in Ohio means you have to be done. You have to have who the nominee is. I think it's in July or maybe it's June. And if you don't do that, then you have to have some special regulations that are voted on in order to allow a different way for this to happen. And doesn't seem like the Ohio General Assembly is going to do that. And since the Democrats put the convention in August, if people actually follow the rules, Biden is not on the ballot in Ohio. But it doesn't matter, because how is Biden on the ballot anyway? How? Are you listening to the man at all? If I had told you it was Joe Biden who said I wrote in Dick Cheney in 2020, you'd be like, oh yeah, I totally believe it. Good Lord. This is Tony Katz today.
Again, Tucker's a smart guy, yet he's taking the side of terrorists. There's no other explanation than his unabashed hatred of Jews. 20 years ago, we all remember, Stewart exposed Tucker for what he is. That ended Carlson's tenure on CNN's Crossfire. But there is a larger lesson to take. Now, 6 months since Hamas attacked Israel, since the hostages were taken. Hamas has been exposed for what they are. Stewart has been exposed for caving to his liberal viewers. Carlson's been exposed for siding with terrorists. And now in America, and this is the sad part, hating Jews, calling for the destruction, celebrating their rape, it's now okay.
That's Leland Vittert over at News Nation. I've known Leland a while. He did this on his show the other night. I said, my God, that is not pulling any punches, now is it? Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. And I talked about John Stewart on this show. I talked about John Stewart clearly taking the side of Hamas, giving aid and comfort to Hamas, saying that what Israel is doing is just so terrible. What Israel's doing, don't they know that they're wrong? America has to stop them. If we provide them the weapons, they have to do what we tell them. I love it when John Stewart, who is building out his bona fides with the progressive left, then says we should be an imperialist power telling other countries what to do. That's always what? Am I the only person who noticed? No? Good. I didn't want to be the only guy who noticed because that would have been really weird. But Tucker Carlson, why in the world is Leland Vittert going after Tucker Carlson? Well, this goes to a larger conversation regarding Tucker and Candace Owens and this whole thing with Daily Wire, where I think there is a reality, because words have meaning, and you hear something enough, all right, yeah, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. But I think that there's a bit of a disconnect in how this comes to be. So of course, the war in Israel and the attack from Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization that needs to be destroyed. I make no bones about this. I apologize to no one for it. Israel has the right to exist and defend itself. And we have seen the college campus set and the political set say they don't even talk about the attack that murdered 1,200. It's just, look at what Israel's doing. My God, look at all the thousands of people dead. They take their numbers from Hamas, a terrorist organization that lies. They lie about the numbers of people who are dead. They lie about the number of children who are dead. They lie about the number of women who are dead. They lie. The left never talks about the hostages. It's not even a conversation. There are Americans who are hostages. It doesn't even come up. They don't care. Because as we have discussed, even on this show today, the objective is not Israel. The objective is Western culture, Western civilization. The objective is your kids. And how do they harm your kids? And how do they take their theories, philosophies, and get them to dominate? Right? They're the ones doing Three Body Problem. If you haven't seen it yet, I did not read the book, but I'm enjoying the show, and I'll leave it there. So with Candace, who I was never a fan of, ever. Didn't think she was exceptionally bright, didn't think she was exceptionally poignant. She was willing to have a fight, and people do love a fighter, right? But just not my cup of tea. And she was there with Daily Wire, and then clashes with Ben Shapiro over Israel and conversations about Jews, and then she's no longer under contract, and she writes out a post on X that says, I'm free. Free? What are you even talking about? You could have left anytime you want. You got a fan base? Go start your own thing. I'm free. Ridiculous. It's just silly. But that fight, that back and forth, was it all about Israel? And Candace Owens is an anti-Semite? Candace Owens might have an issue with Jews. She might be an anti-Semite. And certainly she's wrong about Israel. But I want you to put that to the side just for a second. Why is Tucker coming into the mix? Tucker is coming into the mix because Tucker did an interview on his show on X.
As always, the Christians who suffer. When there's a war abroad that the United States is funding, it is Christians who tend to die disproportionately. And this goes back a long way, 60 years really, to Vietnam, where Catholics in that country were massacred, but it's accelerated. So, for example, during the more than a decade the U.S. government spent occupying Iraq, the ancient Christian community of Iraq was completely devastated. 9 out of 10 of them are no longer there. They're gone.
So this is the way he starts the conversation. And on the post, he put, how does the government of Israel treat Christians? In the West, Christian leaders don't seem interested in knowing the answer. They should be. Here's the view of a pastor from Bethlehem. Now, I have no idea of knowing whether Christian leaders in the West, meaning the United States, aren't interested in how Christians are being treated anywhere, in Israel or any other country. I have no proof that they're not interested. But he's putting that out as a statement of fact. Here's the view of a pastor from Bethlehem. Let's stop and engage a bit of recognition. Bethlehem is not under Israeli control, right? It would be wrong to say not in Israel, but not under Israeli control. Bethlehem, as I have the story, and I have the story from David Friedman, who was the U.S. ambassador to Israel from 2017 to 2021, okay? In this conversation, we note that Bethlehem was under Israeli control in about the mid-1990s, and the population was 80% Christian. Then the Oslo Accords came into effect, and that resulted in Palestinian rule. And since that time, Bethlehem has become 80% Muslim, and Christians, according to David Friedman, are afraid. But, quote, they don't speak out against the Palestinian Authority because you just can't and survive, unquote. I think it's odd that Tucker Carlson, to have a conversation about how Christians are being treated, would go to a pastor from Bethlehem. What about the pastor himself? The pastor himself goes under the Twitter feed of Munther Isaac, and it reads, Father, husband, Palestinian Christian theologian. I'm sorry, what now? Palestinian Christian theologian. Palestinian. Tucker Carlson went to somebody who is Palestinian to find out how Christians are living in Israel in Bethlehem? None of this is even rational. And then when you go to the Twitter account, right, his bio, this pastor on X, it says, where does he live? Occupied Palestine. Tucker. Now you have an idea of where Leland Vittert over there at News Nation was coming from. Is Tucker an outright anti-Semite? Well, this ain't good. You take a guy who says he's an occupied Palestine, which is a position of pure Jew hate, and you have him on to discuss how Christians are being treated in Israel, when he is not only Palestinian, says he lives in occupied Palestine, and is in Bethlehem. I'm sorry, calling Tucker Carlson a Jew hater can be applied. This is nuts. There's only one reason to do this. But, now, and we should be clear, I am not in any way condoning Tucker here. Tucker's wrong. When Tucker did the interview with Vladimir Putin, you heard me say it, I had no problem with him doing the interviews with Vladimir Putin. You do the interview with whoever gives you the interview if you want to do the interview. But then you're putting out videos about how great the supermarkets are? Stop it. That's ridiculous. That's a propaganda freak show and you're just wrong. You're wrong and that's the end of the conversation. You want me to tell you directly, Tucker? Look, I've only done the show a couple of times when it was on Fox, and I want to say for the record, I've been in the man's office once. He wouldn't remember This was decades ago. I was thinking of a TV idea, and I just wanted to get his thoughts on it. I happened to be in D.C., and he was kind enough to take the meeting with me. There has never been a moment where someone hasn't said to me, dude, that's the nicest dude. Tucker Carlson. Never a moment. But I don't have a friendship with him. And plenty of people can be like, oh, I know this. They always do that. They did that about Andrew Breitbart. When Andrew Breitbart passed away, everyone was like, oh, I was his friend. Oh, I was this. Oh, I was that. I knew Andrew. I was in the same circles as Andrew. I wrote for big journalism, you know, but I was never hired. And I would never have called us friends. And certainly polite to each other, but I wouldn't have done that, right? Friends are friends. You don't do that to make yourself look better. That's nuts. I just wanted to give you my level of full history there. The propaganda on Russia was gross. It was despicable, and I thought he looked ridiculous. Tucker being called an anti-Semite for this, Tucker brought a lot of that on himself. But why did it happen? Like with the Candace Owens stuff, why? They really hated Jews and Israelis and Israel right from the beginning. What if I put forth a different argument? And I don't excuse anything Candace Owens has said, nor anything Tucker Carlson has said. But what if the thing that drives them is not the hatred of Jews? What if the thing that drives them is this idea of isolationism? Their issue, their problem is that America gets into all these wars and the forever wars, and it's always getting into a conflict, and it's the world's police officer, and it's doing this, and it's doing that, and if it would just stop and not get engaged and not get involved and not be a part of this, and it's not our problem. Remember, that's the argument that Tucker gives about Ukraine. Ukraine is not our problem. Why should we get involved in a conflict a half a world away where nobody even knows what Ukraine is? Again, he makes these statements as if they are fact when it is real supposition. I think that would be the proper word there. He's saying this, but he doesn't provide anything to back it up. Supposition would be the right word. The act of supposing. That's what supposition means. What if the desire to not get involved is so great that it becomes such the driving force that there is no consideration to, well, what is it that I'm actually saying here? When top line, all they could think of is, we shouldn't be involved. Now, Ukraine is much different than Israel and Hamas, because Hamas holds American hostages. And the idea that for well over 180 days, we've done nothing? Don't ever tell me Joe Biden's a good leader. Don't tell me Joe Biden is a good leader and a great American. You have American hostages, and that guy hasn't done a damn thing. But to that end, there are American hostages. There should be some level of reaction from the United States, and I believe that reaction should be strong. The reaction from the United States when it came to the Houthi rebels attacking ships, changing the way they maneuver through the Red Sea, costing people, never mind billions of dollars, but thinking that they, through the, as a proxy of Iran, can control the navigable seas, we should have been bombing people like it was our job. It's only the future of getting goods from point A to point B at stake. It's only the future of being able to freely navigate the waters of the world at stake. There are times to get involved. And I hear you. It doesn't mean that every time is a time to get involved, and not every issue rises to the level of involvement. I support giving weaponry to Ukraine. I do not support putting a single troop on the ground. I support getting American hostages back, and I don't care if Gaza gets burned to the ground. That's me. If Tucker or Candace don't want to do that, okay. Okay, I think that's weak, but okay. But to push a, we don't want to get involved in war, to, you see, the problem with them Jews. That is ugly stuff. And in both cases, don't tell me that somehow I'm too emotional. I just spelled out what I think they're doing and what they've done to try and obtain their goals. And they got to deal with the consequences of their actions. Do I look at Tucker differently now? Absolutely. Do I question Tucker's motives and motivations now? Absolutely. Do I question his sincerity now? Absolutely. And do I think he hates Jews? I don't think he's a fan. That's what I think now. That's what he did. Do I think Candace is a fan? No. No, I don't. And not just of, not a fan of Ben Shapiro, which I think it's fine not to be a fan of Ben Shapiro. I think it's totally okay. Candace is, has shown what she is and where she is. I do think they have this secondary kind of driving force about an ideology that I think is mistaken. But people are going to try and reflexively defend Tucker. I don't think so. He did this to himself. He said these words, and he has to deal with it. And you could not have picked a weaker guy to interview on the subject to make people say, wow, you really do have a problem, Tucker. And he does. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. We are nowhere near out of the DEI mess. There is a group that has found that approximately two-thirds of colleges and universities have requirements for diversity, equity, and inclusion to graduate. You need to take the courses to satisfy graduation requirements. That's nuts. They investigated 248 colleges from all 50 states plus the District of Columbia, and 67% of the institutions mandate DEI courses. If your kids are going to college, know where they're going, know what's demanded, and know where to fight. It's on you and your kids, for sure. This is Tony Katz Today.